Hello, and welcome to Week in Review, formerly known as Synopsis, your weekly roundup of news and analysis from OnFIF around the world. I'm Julie Levier-Vignoli. Today, we're talking about a possible Hamiltonian moment for Europe, helicopter money's unearned popularity, what the crisis means for oil, and how the EU's pandemic response could shape climate action. All that, and more, coming right up. Welcome to the inaugural edition of Week in Review. Earlier this week, our chairman, David Marsh, spoke to Otmar Issing, former board member of the European Central Bank. Southern Euro area members will be disappointed if they push for a Hamiltonian moment to unify European finance in the wake of the coronavirus upheavals, warned Issing. Referring to proposals by France and other countries for pan-European corona bonds, Issing said Alexander Hamilton, the first American Treasury Secretary, by mutualizing debt after the Revolutionary War against the English, helped pave the way for further conflict. Issing explained, "It's not the first time that a Hamiltonian moment has been declared. The US case after the War of Independence is not as simple as sometimes seen. Prominent historians regard the mutualization of debt and the ensuing fiscal policies of several states as one of the causes of the Civil War. The US example gives a reason to consider the risk of rising political tensions among EU member states and their people." Speaking of scenarios for a 2020 German output decline of 5-20%, Issing said, "Millions of livelihoods are threatened. This requires immense financial resources, not just budgetary spending. There is a need for temporary exemptions and relief in tax policy, regulatory requirements and legal barriers. And there is a need for guarantees." Declaring the EU is a community of solidarity, he said the European Commission had announced a number of financial support schemes. This includes financing short-time working benefit for member states and additional financial help from the EU budget. Access to the European Stability Mechanism will be alleviated. The rules on the Stability and Growth Pact were already suspended. "These are impressive measures," said Issing. To read the full interview, and I certainly recommend that you do, visit onfif.org. There's been quite a lot of debate around helicopter money since the start of the pandemic, but Stephen Grenville, former deputy governor of the Reserve Bank of Australia, warns that central bank independence could be under threat if proposals are carried out. Stephen wrote, "Helicopter money, or money finance deficits, is back in vogue with the realization that the economic response to coronavirus will expand budget deficits dramatically. If advocates of this funding understood its mechanics, there would be far less enthusiasm for this apparent free lunch." The central bank provides the government cash to spend in return for a bond. As the government spends, the cash circulates, but the public doesn't hold extra cash balances. Any excess is deposited with commercial banks who pass it back to the central bank, adding to their reserves. The banking system ends up with essentially all the newly created central bank money. The outcome is that the budget expenditure has been funded by the bank's inescapable reserve increases. Their excess reserves fund the central bank's bond holding, which in turn funds the deficit. Why is this different from funding the budget in the normal way by selling bonds to the public? Bond yields are lower than they would have been with normal funding, not only because the central bank has taken the new bonds onto its balance sheet, but also because individual banks, trying to unload their excess cash reserves, have bid down interest rates along the curve. Instead of issuing bonds to be taken up by the public at whatever yield the market demands, the central bank forces the commercial banks to fund the deficit, paying the designated remuneration rate on these bank reserves. Banks' margins are squeezed and interest rates are suppressed. Savers and depositors earn less. Financial markets are repressed. Among the advocates of these methods, the former central bankers best understand the vexed governance issues involved. An informed discussion on these options might make more transparent the threat to central bank independence from the slippery slope of QE infinity and its analogue money financed deficits. In both these options, the central bank becomes a captive vehicle to facilitate cheap budget funding. Call it what you will, money finance deficits, helicopter money, QE infinity, or modern monetary theory. They are all in the same dangerous territory, where budget deficits are no longer constrained by the need to finance them through the open market. Another consequence of the pandemic has been a severe drop in oil prices. Elliot Hentoff, head of policy and research at State Street Global Advisors, wrote, "The pandemic has caused an unprecedented oil price shock with virtually no beneficiaries. Movements in the oil price typically generate a wealth transfer from producers to consumers or vice versa. From a global perspective, they are relatively balanced. However, in this instance, the collapse in producer revenue is not matched by consumer gains as public health measures restrict an increase in, or simply maintenance of, consumption. There is likely to be record-breaking oversupply in the coming months, even assuming, optimistically, the lockdowns are lifted gradually by early May. The rapid dissolution of this oversupply by spring 2021 assumes that as demand recovery sets in, supply cuts accelerate. One certainty in the era of even lower oil prices is higher funding needs for all oil producers, including those with higher break-even fiscal profiles, as well as large sovereign funds. More importantly, there will remain a major funding gap for most oil sovereigns, including Gulf Cooperation Council members. These states will need to rely on global bond markets to fund their fiscal budgets, so a simultaneous rush of higher borrowing could continue to push up borrowing costs, in particular, given the large borrowing plans in the US, Europe, and China. Emerging market sovereigns will need to compete even harder than in 2015 when high-grade sovereign paper was in short supply. Looking to the future, how the EU responds to the pandemic could shape its response to the climate crisis. Researchers Irene Monasterolo and Ulrich Voltz wrote, "The EU must respond forcefully to stabilize the economy and public health, but it cannot afford to deal with COVID-19 while ignoring the climate crisis. After the initial crisis, the economy will need substantial investment before it reignites. What is needed is a coordinated response from the European Commission, European Central Bank, and European Investment Bank, which would smooth the socioeconomic and financial effects of the crisis. At the same time, it would open the way to a shared management of current and future crises, especially the climate crisis, by building complementarities with the EU's Green Deal. The Commission should issue COVID-19-related bonds to fund a stabilisation response. The EIB can then issue Green Deal bonds to finance structural investments to support recovery and strengthen climate infrastructures. The Commission would issue Eurobonds that are conditioned to the COVID-19 response with long maturities. Their use would be restricted to address the crisis. These conditioned Eurobonds would provide immediate short-term relief. All EU member states could benefit. The bonds would go on the market and everyone could purchase them. At the same time, the EIB would issue new Green Deal bonds that support projects in the reconstruction phase via structural investments that are aligned with the EU's carbon neutrality targets. Member states should agree on an increase of the EIB's capital, enabling it to extend its ability to raise private capital, exploiting its AAA rating. Although an EIB capital increase would lead to a debt-to-GDP ratio increase for member countries, it would be much less than if they were to issue COVID-19 bonds individually, and they would not be individually exposed to financial markets' reactions. With a simultaneous issuance of these bonds, member states would not need to choose between addressing the current crisis and tackling the climate crisis. This proposal would operationalize the call for a common debt instrument without the need for direct monetary financing. It would not leave the countries most in need in a position to accept conditionality that their citizens could not accept, triggering potential political crises. This would help the EU to display unity and solidarity to financial markets and its peoples. As Martin Wolf put it, if the euro area cannot show solidarity in such a crisis, its failure will neither be forgotten nor forgiven." That was just a brief overview of the many pieces we published this week. You can read these pieces in full and everything else we published on omfif.org. Looking ahead to next week, on Wednesday, 15th of April, Salvatore Serval, Deputy Secretary General of France's Secretariat General for European Affairs, discusses the crisis and responses set out by the French government and European institutions to mitigate a long-term recession. The same day, Shatib Basri, chairman of the Mandiri Institute and Indonesia's former finance minister, discusses whether Indonesia's domestically driven economy could help the country withstand the global economic impact of the coronavirus outbreak. On Thursday, 16th of April, Joseph Chan, Hong Kong's Undersecretary for Financial Services and the Treasury, discusses the effects of the pandemic on economic activity and financial markets, as well as the Hong Kong government's fiscal stimulus. Finally, on Friday, 17th of April, Sébastien Raspier, head of financial affairs at France's Ministry of Economy and Finance, discusses how far France's pandemic policies go, what more needs to be done, and what regulation and supervisory changes will need to be implemented to ensure continued market access. All of these meetings are virtual and participants will be asked to join remotely. And that is all for this edition of the Week in Review. To read more about everything we've discussed, go to www.umfif.org or scroll down to the show notes underneath this podcast, where you will find links to everything mentioned today. If you wish to stay up to date with UMFIF news, analysis, and forthcoming meetings, sign up at umfif.org/subscribe. I'm Julie Levy-Abignoli. Thank you for listening.